This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Once a jolly swagman can't buy a billabong under the shade of a cooler battery, and he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boil. You'll come a-waltzing Matilda with me.
This is Front Runner, Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Hing. A little over a year ago, Anurendra Jagadeva, Anu, the artist, was in the studio. Then he was back from Australia, and his painted art installation titled Yesterday in a Padded Room had just been exhibited at the Hong Kong Art Basel. This time he's back again from Australia, and with an exhibition of 39 portraits. This exhibition is aptly titled On the Way to the Airport, New Australian Paintings. As if suggesting that they were conceived rushing to catch a plane. And these were as if images that ran through his mind standing in line to walk through electronic screening gates, X-ray machines, or up close and personal with security officers patting him down for dangerous tubes of paint in excess of 100 milliliters that he might try to smuggle on board. We'll find out more. Anu, welcome.
Oh, yeah.
Always
you
such a pleasure.
That's brilliant. I wish I had thought of saying that, okay? That's exactly what the work is.
First thing, when I read the press release that you painted on, quote, actual pages taken from the Picturesque Atlas of Australasia, a vintage London-based publication from the 1880s, yeah. I thought, what kind of artist is this that would paint on such old paper that one would think it ought to be preserved? So you need to tell us this story.
Yeah, I know. It's quite sacrilegious, right, for people yeah. who are passionate about preserving things. And I am as well. But, if my wife's head was flat, I'd put something on it, okay? So I'm a collector of bric-a-brac, of things from garage sales and bazaars. And, you know, you go to little antique markets and you find these things. I don't know how rare they are, but I found them precious. They had these beautiful plates in them. They had beautiful prints in them, you know, these really high-quality plates, the way they used to be done, wonderful line etchings and things like that. So the images were amazing. And the stories, you know, from 1880, right, the kind of colonial British Empire.
The glorious days.
The glorious days. And the view they had of the world. Right, and then you juxtapose that in the context of the here and now.
Yeah, right? Then the worldview was God is in his heavens and
right.
all is well on earth.
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. Kind of like, you know, the empire the sun never set on, right? So that whole idea. So I think this magazine, the Australasia...
The Picturesque Atlas.
Was made for people in the... mother country, to get an impression of what the colonies were like.
Like a tourist brochure.
Like National Geographic, but 120 years ago. These things, they just lie in piles in bazaars. As you said, it's a precious document, and they're just kind of there, right? Nobody cares about them, but they are on beautiful stock paper, distressed. I like that. I like the fact that the paper has... its own story, a 100-year-old story to tell, to imagine all these people who would have looked at it 120 years ago and how what's current and here and now becomes redundant so quickly, right? When I looked at this 100-year-old world and all the people who had written these things as young people in a new frontier, discovering new things, and now...
A sense of celebration.
Yes, that's right. And then a kind of idyllic... world, you know, a view of the Aboriginal and, you know, the convicts. Everyone had a place and knew their place. And I thought that was quite interesting as well now in the here and today, in a new kind of a reshaping of a world order. And that kind of longing, if you look at the powers that be all around the world.
Did the idea of this exhibition or the idea of this series stem from the fact that you, in your busy schedule going around to garage sale, you stumble upon this book and then say, ah, here is an idea? Or were you thinking of these ideas, and then you found this book, and then this is the medium I'll paint on.
Okay, what I do is I just collect stuff all the time, and I know it will find a place eventually, either in inspiring me and giving me an idea, or actually in being the physical thing itself. So I buy like little objects that find its way into the work and things like that. It's crazy. So I got these about 2 years ago when we first moved back, and they were just kind of lying around. And then Trump came along 18 months ago, and he sucked the air out of the world, right? You know, and you felt as if you couldn't breathe. And then I was looking at these images and this kind of 1880 idyllic, you know, from the 1880s, kind of world order where everyone knew their place. You know, there was a hierarchy, and there were colonies, there was the empire, and all of us were the little peoples of bigger.
We were the brown-skinned people.
That's
they,
right.
they were trying to make us gentlemen.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yes.
The creation of little gentlemen, right?
Yeah, brown-skinned
gentlemen. Yes, that's right. And my great-grandfather was a little gentleman with a bow tie and aspirations. As Indian it always says, right? I think in their skit they use it, that the reason why Indians are all tappers is because latex is white. Okay. So those aspirational values, which we can laugh at, I think, a little bit now, or a lot, yeah. But yeah, so that idea, I think it's a clash of all kinds of, like a perfect storm. And I had these pages and they were wonderful. And they had words in them and actually to read what was in them. 80, you know, from
so you read the whole
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, well, yeah. I read bits and pieces, and then gradually I began to read everything in it. And they really kept me laughing, you know, because it's this Victorian world.
I can see what's happening, you know. You got hold of this atlas, and then the world changed after you quit. But how did the idea of what to put in on each page come about?
Well, each page would inform what I'd put in, like, like we were talking just now, I showed you that image of the night visit. And it's the book had different, it's like National Geographic. Different. It talks
different
about
sections.
Climate. It talks about flora and fauna. It talks about city life. It talks about new migrants coming, you know, the new, you know, coming from England and settlers, not migrants, sorry. Settlers, right? And it's all very idyllic. Women in little boats with parasols and, you know, all these etchings, wonderful etchings. It was wonderful to look at that and then think of what the world is today and how far we've come. And in the same breath, how little it's changed, right? Because all the prejudices and all the norms and this kind of conservative longing for the way things used to be.
Interesting that the campaign slogan was, make that country great again.
Again.
Yeah, word again is what I'm underscoring.
I think that's what the work, that's actually perfect. Because the word again refers back to what I'm trying to do with this work, with this whole body of work.
In reality, what you're showing then is the fracture between what the present is and what the past idealizes, and a group wanting to take us back to that idealized past, which is really not so ideal for some of us.
It's not so ideal for some of us, right? Who wants to go back to that horrible past? I think people always say, oh my God, you know, when we talk about issues, we often get accused of longing for a pre-independence kind of world where, you know, it's not really that. I think this is the best time for us to be alive in, for human beings to live, right? I mean, we've moved so much in so many ways, but that doesn't mean we, you know, just kind of ignore the strange things that are happening around us as well.
I know you are a Malaysian.
Yes.
Notwithstanding the fact that we know that you are quite global. You went to school overseas. But why paint Australians?
They're Australians and New Australians. And look, I've always tried to understand the world around me, okay? I've always said this in all my work. In a way, it's therapy for me, and it's a beautiful way for me to express myself. I enjoy it, and I'm always trying to make sense of what's happening around me. firstly, my new context in living in Australia right now means that this is the kind of world around me at the moment, right? So you respond to that. But a lot of the issues are not Australian issues, right? They're global issues. I think the work, they're called New Australian Paintings purely from the point of that's where I'm painting them from. But the issues, how hard it is to be a Muslim man in a first world country right now, I think is something that I find really quite amazing, because over here, we're always aware of the sensitivities. That's the wonderful thing about May 13th, in a way, isn't it? We all became sensitive to each other, not tolerant. But I think it's a wonderful thing to be sensitive of each other. It allows us to try and put our own opinions forward while being quite conscious of what somebody else feels and does.
Some would say this is all playing political correctness.
Yeah. I'm sad about the word political correctness, I think. I think it's a wonderful idea. It's become whiny and horrible now and taken to extremes on both sides of the
debate.
Of the debate, I think. But I love political correctness, actually. But it's gone a strange way, isn't it? It's like multiculturalism was such a wonderful idea, right? But it's like a dirty word now, the world around.
So as an artist who is Malaysian and global, the Australians that you paint, and if you want to look at it very narrowly, it's an Australian exhibition. It could come from an Australian artist, you think?
It could come from an Australian artist, as in I'm an Australian artist now. I'm a Malaysian artist. I live in Australia. So I'm a kind of Australian artist as well. I mean, the world's become so small, right? But the view is still very much in sync with what my work's always been about. In a way, you're always trying to, first as part of a big empire that we come from, this Asian need to be white. I think that the brown man's need to be Anglo. And so we've always had these kind of push and pull, right? Well, look, a lot of these paintings are portraits of young Muslim men. They're people like me. They also look at white people. There's a painting there called Three White People I Know. It's an interesting phenomenon that's happening in Australia, because when we went 20 years ago, there were so few migrants as such. I mean, you know, it was much less than it is now, that we were like exotic birds. Everyone practiced our names before we got there and everything, okay? So they could say it right, and it's that whole PC thing again. And so we had lots of Australian friends, you know, white Australian friends. But Australia has become so multicultural now, 20 years on. It's good, but it's also strange, because we work and we meet and we socialize with white Australians very, very comfortably, but there are enough little pockets of Asian people, and which is sad in a way, because you gravitate towards your... So this whole tribalism that...
Still exists.
It still exists, right? More so now than it was before, when we went to Australia the first time around. In some ways, it makes it easier. In other ways, it's a sad thing that we've become colloquial again. Is that right, colloquial?
No, become communal.
Communal, sorry, yeah. It's an interesting phenomenon. So I think it's about negotiating, thinking about all of that as well. So they're not really... They are portraits of rice cookers, of young Rohingya men at the airport in KLIA. I look at young, big, burly Baltic men at the Melbourne airport, and I think of them, I imagine them going off to fight for ISIS and, you know... because these are the cliches that people believe in. The stereotypes that people believe in. So I think the work explores those things through portraiture as well.
I'm speaking with Anurendra Jagadeva, just back from Australia, and he has this exhibition titled On the Way to the Airport, New Australian Paintings. I've just asked him this question about how do Australians feature in the works of a Malaysian artist? I want to carry on this conversation. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
I am, you are, we are Australia. I came from the dreamtime, from the dusty red soil plains. I am the ancient heart, the keeper of the flame. I stood upon the rocky shore, I watched the tall ships come. For 40,000 years I'd been the first Australian.
Good afternoon, this is Front Runner, Bigger Picture, and I'm Soon Heng speaking with Anu, who is back in Malaysia to launch this exhibition titled On the Way to the Airport, New Australian Paintings. My question to Anu was, as a Malaysian artist, is he painting Australia or is he painting Malaysia? Anu, you mentioned that you work differently there. I want to know what you mean by that.
Okay, the first thing is, the exhibition is actually not New Australian Paintings. That was the early incarnation of it. And the more I thought about it, they're called New Keepsakes by Anurendra Jagadeva, because the works are actually presented...
But the word Australia has now...
Yeah,
is now taken
because I think
out.
That's a bit confusing in a sense, because it's very much about... Of course, so much of it is about the context of being displaced and being taken away from a comfort zone and put in another context, right?
But you're not really displaced in the way I would say refugees are displaced.
This is a choice. Of course, we are economic migrants in some sense. In fact, we are romantic migrants. That's what we are. We have the luxury of... My daughter was going away to boarding school. Basically, I've painted and I've worked sporadically, but I spent most of her life with her. I work from home. I think we're
close.
I am very.
She's daddy's girl.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I suppose I don't. Please, she'll never condone that kind of a description. But anyway, so when she was going away 6 months before that, I suddenly thought to myself, I think I might go too again. I don't know. This whole separation anxiety, it's like I've turned into my parents in a way. But I think how difficult it must have been for our parents, because so many of us went away, right? And there were no mobile phones. There was no internet. Once a week, you would find a payphone somewhere. Write that bloody aerogram, you know.
Aerogram, yeah, they don't exist
right.
anymore.
They don't exist anymore. And they let us go away. And now we have become so mollycoddled, we as parents, not so much the kids, that the separation anxiety, I don't know how our parents did it. They were stronger and braver. Must have been the Japanese occupation, I think. Just steel them
up. Very stoic.
Yeah, they're very stoic. And so this is an indulgence in a way that we were able to follow her. But as far as my work's concerned, I think comfort zones are always, after a while, you need to shake it up a bit and go away from where you're comfortable. Change is, it sparks something anyway.
How did you work differently?
In many ways, I always try and... Look, I'm a portrait painter. I love the human face. As you said, every one of my bloody T-shirts has got somebody's face on it. I think I'm also used portraiture in my search for heroes. That's probably a thing, you know, we're all looking, right? Post the... This complicated world, what is a hero, who is a hero, who are our heroes, our role models and things like that. And a lot of it is that, trying to explain that and think about it. How do I work differently in Australia? I think I always try and reinvent what portraiture is about. I like the unfashionable notion that art can carry a narrative as well. When I went to art school, that was frowned upon. You know, it was seen as propagandist to have a narrative and...
It should be just about the aesthetics.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the aesthetics or some kind of an abstract idea of what art is and things like that. I mean, a lot of Asian storytelling is still, that tradition of the narrative is still very strong. And so it's just part of my whole cultural baggage, I suppose, as well. So I like to tell these stories. It's about new ways of telling the stories, right? I understand that after, 1,000 years, that painting cannot just be about moving paint around, you know. So that need to constantly reinvent or rethink how you approach the medium as well forces you anyway. But look, little things like over here I had a big studio. Over there I have a small studio. So it dictates what you're working with and how you're working.
So are these works smaller then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. These are smaller. And because I'm...
Of the atlas.
Yeah, that's right. They're the size of the atlas. They're dictated by the size of the atlas itself. And these 180-year-old parchments. It's like, you know, and so they are presented in notice boards. You know, our school notice board with the lock and the door, the pintu with the glass. I mean, they have them in schools in Australia as well. It's a standard kind of thing all over the world.
I think
it's
pretty
right?
British.
Yes,
very
that's
British.
Right. It's British, of course. Yeah, it's a colonial leave-over or whatever.
Legacy,
yeah. And so they are presented in these boxes with little locks, each one of them. So that's why I call them keepsakes, because they're in a memory box almost. I like the idea of it being a papan kenyataan, because in a way, even though we are so matang, we really need to be schooled still, right, obviously. I saw this fantastic exhibition last year at the V&A in London, and it was called Revolution, and it kind of mapped the whole civil rights movement and all since World War II. And at the end of it, it had this montage of every little thing that had happened since, you know, from the Farrakhans to Black Panther movement, the hippie movement, Lenin and all that leading up to Obama, and then the last image. And it played to imagine. It's very cliché, but it ended with Trump, an image of Trump. And the thing that I find really amazing is that after 50 years since the Second World War, of everyone trying to make the world a better place, first to become more civilized, to get away from all those old tribal ugliness, right? Everyone seems to just want to go back to that now. You know, after it's very depressing.
Interesting enough, I was listening to a TED Talk, and I think it's an anthropologist who did some research, which he was actually trying to prove was that we have become more violent.
Yes,
The truth is that we are more peaceful now. We are less violent than we were. That's what he discovered.
That's right, yeah. But I think because we have so much more of a platform, that violence manifests itself not so much in the battlefield or in wars and things like that, but in just a general kind of nastiness, right, about each other, which I find so depressing that, you know. And look, I don't want to be an old man and say the internet is bad, but seriously, it's you know.
The topic that you have created your series around, looking at now and looking at this idyllic past, which is actually an imagined idyllic past.
Yeah.
Where is the humor? Is there humor in your art? Because critique tends to get a bit on the dark side. And some would say, oh, you know, whoa. Is there humor? I know it's quite a funny guy.
Yeah. I mean, look, that's the only way to sell a difficult idea, right? Is to be able, if we couldn't laugh at ourselves, right? My greatest hero is Lut, of course, and always able to laugh at ourselves. But along the way, we, all of us, the world, has become a bit sensitive in it. We have kind of stopped being able to laugh at ourselves. So I think the work takes the mickey out of everything. Like, there is a painting of put on a page about flora and fauna. So it's just flowers, a beautiful etching of flowers. And either side, the Trump ladies, and a side profile of Trump as the leader. And it's called Flowers for the Leader. I think we don't need to get into how crazy everything is just to
actually, when that photograph came out after Trump's
visit to the Vatican
with the women all dressed in black. It became a source for many memes.
Yeah.
And a lot of them very, very funny.
Yeah. And strangely ominous and like a horror film a bit, right? Like The Others or something, you know? It's these, and they looked like turn of the century women in a manor house somewhere where they came from a history of mad people. I don't know. I often find myself speechless these days, which is, you know, that's quite difficult for me. I can talk a lot. But because, I don't know, as I said, he really sucked the air out of the room completely.
Going back to this sense of humor, yeah. I mean, you even painted your parents in this as part of this series.
Yeah. That's a light moment. It's like my parents came to stay for a month. And that's always an event. Right.
That sounds like a very politically correct word.
They're listening to this now, I'm sure, and thinking, "Ayo, that bloody boy." But Yeah, it's always interesting, you know, when you live in the same city, when we irritate each other, when I irritate them or they to me, they can go home and we can go home. When they come to visit, it's much more intense, right? Because we are in the house we are together. So I painted that after they went home because I really missed them after they went home. But while they were there, of course, you know. It's peppered with little anecdotes which are personal as well. The whole idea of my daughter turning 18 and suddenly being an adult. And me saying, oh, I'm such an integral part of her life. And then finding myself completely redundant is dealt with here as well. With the same intensity as being a young Muslim man in Melbourne and how difficult that is. You know, so I think you balance off things, you know, you deal with issues which are difficult and then you lighten it with things that are still quite wonderful anyway, you know, like family and little squabbles and things like that. So it's about finding that balance.
In the portrait of your mom and dad, you also painted yourself, you said.
Yeah. Me as the prodigal son, as like a Jesus-like, my astral self. Yeah, I was very pretty in that painting, wasn't I? Yeah, it's how I think.
With a parakeet or some kind of a bird.
A cockatoo. Yeah, because when
that's
we
in Australia,
were growing up,
right? Cockatoos are
from Australia, but they're also from Southeast Asia. You find them in Indonesia, different breeds of it. When we were growing up, we had a cockatoo named Kana. Right, very strange. I mean, we inherited him from the estate. Somebody had them in the estates. He was an abused bird. And my uncle brought him over, and he stayed with us until I got married, right? Because after I left, he irritated my dad, and, you know, he used to make a lot of noise. And so that cockatoo somehow brought the three of us together.
It's the organization. It's like a pyramid.
Triangle, a pyramid.
With the cockatoo right in the middle.
In the center, yeah. Like a Freemason's logo or something, right?
The all-seeing eye.
I use these devices to lighten things. They're autobiographical. And the cockatoo, of course, is part of the old etching. That's not something I've added in, right? So I've looked at the content of each page and let it dictate the personal narrative or the current affair that I want to deal with based on what the original content was. So there's a kind of lottery to it as well. Sometimes, of course, I smash round things into square holes and make it work, but that's
the will of the artist.
Right? The will of the artist, yeah.
Your exhibition runs from July 5th, that's next Wednesday, through to August 14th.
Yeah.
But in between, there is a launch of something.
Ah, fantastic, yeah. The actual opening of the show is going to be relatively quiet because on the 28th, I hope I've got this date right because Wailing will kill me otherwise. On the 28th, it is the launch of my artist monograph, 320 pages of everything not to bore you to death that I've done in the last 30 years. It's called Sacred Altars. It has essays by June Yap and Beverly Yong, and Wailing's written a really nice piece, and Edin has done an interview with me. It's a bit of a vanity project, kind of pat on my own back, I suppose. But it's nice. It brings all the work together. So we're launching that on the 28th. And this exhibition, in a way, it also kind of dictated. That's why I was kind of got into the whole idea of the word and the book, because we've been working on the book. My daughter designed it. She's in design school now. Yeah, so we got to work together on that. And so she designed the book. So for the last year, we've been fighting and shouting and me trying to get her to get into it and me being lazy as well and all that. So I've lived with this book a little bit. And actually, it's been 5 years in the making. And it has had many incarnations for various reasons, from funding to just the fact that I had quite a lot of projects come my way through the gallery. It got delayed over and over again. And so now it finally is happening. And I kind of thought the pages from the diary were kind of perfect to go with the idea of launching my own book. You know, so it kind of, the book ends with these pages from my kind of Australian keepsakes from the current work.
Once this is all bedded down, what's the next project? Or have you started already?
My next project is, after much thought about, you know, as I said, being distracted by this distraction that is the world. I mean, everywhere, right? The new world order, I think, you know, it's the next great change. I think the last was the Second World War, when kind of the British Empire gave way to a new imperial American kind of superpower, you know, in the Cold War and all that. Now I think it is another shift, right? And maybe China will play a much more interesting role in the world. I don't know. And we're all open to that and excited, I think, here in Asia. A bit frightened sometimes, but mostly excited, I suppose.
Do you see hope in the fact that France has gotten very young and somehow...
Obama-esque.
Yeah. And so Canada and now Ireland.
I think it's great. I think Macron is a bit of a dude, isn't he? He's very pretty. And he's a
Trudeau, the one from Ireland.
I've always been interested in the whole idea of power structures as such. So the book launches on the 28th, and then on the 1st, I do my first big American trip. So I'm 4 weeks with a friend, my close friend Dave. We start in New York. And we drive across Nashville and all of that. Memphis.
Go down to
New Orleans. And then up through Santa Fe and all of that. And then end up through Vegas, of course. And then San Francisco. And then I fly back. And I think it's going to be the next
The inspiration
big
for
do,
your
yeah.
next show. So you definitely got to stop in Utah.
Yes, of course.
And do something about the Mormons.
Well, I don't know about doing anything, but definitely enjoying it and thinking about it. And it will definitely translate into the next body of work in a big way. And it's something, you know, we've grown up on American culture, definitely, over here. Everything from TV and I think,
fast food.
Yeah. In a way, I mean, I wish I'd gone during the Obama years. It would have been, but in a way, this is much more exciting to go now and get a sense of... You know, and you know, a lot of my dad says, why do you care? It's happening in America. It doesn't affect us. But the world's so small. Everything that everyone does anywhere affects all of us. It does in a strange way.
Always a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ning. Always a pleasure to come and see you, definitely.
The art exhibition titled On the Way to the Airport, New Keepsakes.
Yes. New Keepsakes
by Anu Jagadeva at Wailing Contemporary in the Gardens Mall. Begins next week, July 5th, and will run till Monday, August 14th. Gallery hours are Tuesday to Sunday from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And don't forget the launch of the book, July 28th, if Anu is correct. This is Front Row on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng, BFM 89.9.
The river broke, the bloodwood and the desert oak, holding wrecks and boiling diesels, steam at 45 degrees. The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share. The time has come, a fact's a fact, it belongs to them, let's give it back. How can we dance when our earth is turning? Lives and breathes in 45 degrees. The time has come to say fair's fair, to pay the rent, to pay our share.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.